Bushun and in a way, Magani dog. Pesh go bene sequa indigo, mang indu dame, ga osa squadjimmy cog and dunjaba, ga misqua wako cog in da, Elaine Fleming nindishin a cos. In the universe, I'm known as one Thunderbird woman. I am from the Loon Clan. And I'm a Leech Laker, an enrolled member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe Incorporated, a federally recognized tribe. And that all has its history behind it. And I am a storyteller. I came from a family of storytellers. Ni Mama Iban Dorothy Howard, Minawa ni Baba Iban Cy Howard. They all told stories to us as we grew up. When I was born in 1952, we didn't have a TV, but we did have a radio that had an AM station that on good nights you could hear maybe that radio station coming out of Bemidjigamog. And so we passed our time in different ways, and that was through listening to stories. And so for me, when I talk about history, it gets difficult. I read books. I teach a course called Treaty Law and Tribal Sovereignty. And it's about case laws and federal Indian law, how it was developed and how it's based on racism. And so I read a lot, and I'm also a storyteller, though. I know I was raised listening to legends that my mother in particular told me about Nana Bouju. And in telling those stories, she always told me I couldn't tell them in the unless there was snow on the ground. Otherwise, there'd be a big old toad that would come visit me in bed. And even as she got very old and I got older in my 50s, you know, she would always warn me when I was going to go out and tell stories that I couldn't tell Nana Bouju stories unless there was snow on the ground. And, you know, by that time, I mean, she had become a Christian, an Ojibwe woman. And she was a member of the St. Peter's Prince of Peace Church, and that went back into the later 1800s when my great-great-grandmother Mani Johnson came here after our story being that she was raped by a white man on the Red Cliff Reservation, and she was banished from that reservation. When she came here, she traveled to the Leech Lake area up by the mission area up on Lake Andrusia, where my maternal side of my family lived. Anyway, that's what first really interested me in Ojibwe history, was to know how she got here. How would a young woman in the mid-1800s travel this far, and what route would she come by? What would she wear? What would she eat? And who were the family members? What were their Ojibwe names? I wanted to learn a lot. And I think about that too, even as a young woman first going to college at McAllister College in St. Paul. I was always interested in history, and I was interested in myself as an Ojibwe person. I wanted to know our history, and that college there, it was in 1970, and that's when they first began creating Indian education departments and colleges. And so there was one course that was taught at McAllister College, and it was an anthropology course about the Indians that had lived here before and were no more. But I just want to say that because I'm a storyteller and an Ojibwe woman who's interested in our history, that it gets kind of difficult for me at times to separate my telling of history and my feelings about what happened to our people. And I do my best, though, because I am only human, and I'm a grandma and a storyteller, a Leech Lake Ojibwe grandma. So I was talking about, I've been talking about Star Island, about those people who lived out there in their summer residence, and how the Chippewa National Forest manages the land out there. And I was trying to explain or tell stories about our people and the houses that we lived in. And so I talked about my family's allotment land on Lake Andrusia, and how when I was 6 months old, we moved into the southern part of Cass Lake, just south of the railroad tracks. And I was 5 years old when we were living down there when this wood treatment facility opened. And that wood treatment facility would contaminate the air, the soil, the surface water, the underground water. And that's where we lived. So I was 5 years old when that wood treatment facility opened, and later it'd be known as a St. Regis Superfund site. All of us children who lived over there, we didn't have running water. Our homes didn't have, many of them didn't have electricity. We used toilets, and we had pumps where we would go to get that groundwater. And many families would go to this one particular pump where I lived, and we would gather buckets of water. And that's what my big brothers were responsible to do, gather those buckets of water and bring them home. And that water would become contaminated, and we would cook with it. We would wash with it. We would play in it. When I was 5 years old, I started kindergarten, and I would walk through the St. Regis Superfund site. At that time, it was Wheeler's Lumber Mill. And we played on the logs there. We played in the huge puddles. We would have to cross a railroad track, the Burlington Northern Railroad track. And we were just little kids, or elementary and high school kids. And we would walk through the lumber mill, and then we would climb under or over the railroads, the railroad trains, and then we would go to school. And then we would come home through that same place. And that to say that when I talked about in 1979, when the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe passed a resolution declaring the unsanitary, unsafe housing conditions for the Ojibwe people, that our lives were affected. We didn't have enough homes to live in. They were overcrowded, and it led to many problems. So when I was, I lived in that area for about 3 years, from kindergarten up to like second or third grade. And that's when we moved to Track 33, north of Highway 2, just directly north of Cass Lake, Minnesota. No longer would I have to walk through the Superfund site to get to school. Our new house on Track 33 was a single-story house. On three sides, it was tar-papered. The front still had some white covering on it, along with tar paper where the white covering had been torn off. We had an outhouse and a wood barrel stove that was so nice to stand around and warm up on cold northern Minnesota nights. I was 7 or 8 when we moved to Track 33. And, you know, Track 33 is pretty famous around here. Some people say they won't come to Cass Lake because of what has happened on Track 33, that being these stories. You know, they're stories really about poverty and oppression and how that connects to violence and drinking and drugs and later gang activity. But my family, we settled on track 33, and there my mom and dad again made a garden. And in the early 1960s, HUD housing came to track 33. HUD housing came to reservations across the United States because of the poverty and living conditions of our homes. I helped to build our new home, a home with electricity and an indoor bathroom. It was the early 1960s, and life was changing. So, miigwech bisandawi eg. I don't know, I think I was in my 40s before I got to take my first trip out to Star Island with another Ojibwe family, my good friend Julia Greyhawk, and we camped out there on the south shore of the island with our children. Miigwech bisandawi eg, miigwech mi'io.